Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. May us be exit bold. Wake up the silence.
And welcome to the seventh episode of the Star Chamber Show. We got a great one for you tonight. It's going to rock for sure. The first clip that you hear on our show, of course, is from the band Zero King. And tonight we have a very special new segment that we're introducing called Books and Hooks. And Hooks refers, of course, to song hooks. And this is a segment that's going to debut tonight, showcasing musicians who also love the worlds of fantasy and horror and all the kind of good stuff that we talk about. And then later on in the show, we're, of course, going to be joined by Charles Day of Evil Jester Press and Comics, and your hosts for tonight's flight into the stars are Sayla Janelle, Susan Roddy, Michael West, and, of course, your other host, Stephen Zimmer. I am here. But we've got just some quick SSP news. Of course, Jackie Gamber's third novel, Reclamation, in the Leland Dragon series is out, and the print version will be hitting the ground. Probably it should pop up on Amazon at the end of the week, but the ebook version is out. Eric Garrison's Sinking Down is also available right now in ebook and also is imminent on print. And last but not least, we're very happy to say that next week, Stephen Shrewsbury's epic scale sword and sorcery novel, Philistine, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal novel, will be hitting an ebook and followed right after by print. So that's coming right down the pike. And then we'll have some new Imaginarium stuff for you. But tonight we've got two great guests. We're not going to delay long. The first guest I have had the pleasure of knowing for a while, great frontman. Zero King is a band that puts on a phenomenal live show. They're a great balance between hard rock and metal. They've got a great sense for the melodic as well as the heavy edge. It's one of those rare bands that can put together a CD that does not have one weak track. And so Andy Hott is with us tonight, and I'm going to be bringing him aboard for our first ever segment of Books and Hooks. So Andy Hott, welcome to the Star Chamber Show. I think you're live there.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, it's awesome. I'm going to turn you loose to the wolves or the lionesses or whatever we want to call the other co-host tonight. But I'm very, very proud to have you on the show and being our first Books and Hooks featured guests. And so, first of all, just tell us a little bit about what's going on with the band right now. How are things going with the new album? You got, of course, a new, relatively new video, Dead Rockstar. And then you also were recently on the cover of Rockwired Magazine's December issue. So get us up to speed on Zero King real quick.
Sure. Yeah, things are going good right now. It's a little bit of a slow time, just kind of getting over the holidays and all that. Getting back in the swing of things. We've got a couple shows. One is confirmed right now, and the other stuff's in the works, but there'll be more as the year progresses. The video is getting great response. We actually just had a really good write-up by our friend Eddie Metal over at Louisville Music News. He did a little feature on it in his column this month, and, of course, the Rockwired feature from last month. And it's currently you can go to Rockwired Magazine and vote for it as the video of the year. It's up against some other releases, video releases, Boboplex, Bad Man being one of those. So we've got our work cut out for us there if we want to win that. So we need everybody's support on that. We're currently writing for the new record, hoping to get in the studio to record a few new songs, possibly in Louisville, Kentucky, from the way it's looking. Got a potential management company that we're in talks with, and they're wanting to put us in the studio in Louisville. So we're talking about going in the next, say, month and a half, recording a few new songs, and maybe even putting those out there right away for people to sort of get people's feedback and then let people vote as to what should be the first, the lead-off single and the lead-off video for the next record. The video, like I said, doing great. We actually hit 2,500 plays today. That's total, of course, but it's eclipsed 2,500 views. So it's growing. It's getting out there. And other than that, we're just, you know, we're writing, practicing, trying to get the new stuff ready for people's ears and eyes. So.
Well, you guys have been working your tails off. I know that. And, of course, I know you have a lion's heart when it comes to this, because I've always said that, you know, I used to think authors had the worst of all the entertainment industries, but now I can definitively say that musicians probably have the hardest road because of all those lovely things like Spotify and all messing up, the revenues from, sales of music itself. And so tell us a little bit about what life is like as a musician these days, kind of fight forward.
It's tougher than I can ever remember it, honestly, as far as even just getting shows, because there's so many bands, and so many bands are willing to play for peanuts or to pay to play and things like that. It gets tough. You have to kind of work the politics to get on the good shows and to even kind of cover your expenses, to travel and things like that. Hopefully those things will change as the profile grows a bit. That's one of the reasons that we're talking to this management company, so we can actually get, some funding behind us that helps us pay for radio promotion and maybe covers, some advertising budgets and things like that, to just kind of grow in the public consciousness. As far as like the live scene, it's tougher than I've ever seen it. It's really tough to get people out off their couches and actually, out to the bar. And if they do get to the bar, the chance of them spending that money on, T-shirts and CDs and merchandise, which we used to be able to really rake in extra money to offset our expenses, that's diminished quite a bit as well, I guess, just because of, economy and lack of disposable income and things like that. But it's got its drawbacks, but just like, you guys love what you do and we love what we do. So, we're not going to stop. We're, too driven and too dumb.
I know the feeling. I'm too dumb to quit myself. But on the glamorous side, though, a lot of people here tonight that are hearing you for the first time should know that, you've graced the stage with some of my absolute favorite, younger hard rock and metal bands like, for instance, Airborne, which I'm fanatic about, Pop Evil, which I think is just an amazing band. And you guys have shared the stage with quite a few big names.
Yeah. Over the years, we've been really lucky. We've gotten to play with sometimes my heroes, and other times just up and coming fans I really like. We've done shows with you mentioned Airborne, Pop Evil, Blackstone Cherry, Nonpoint, Drowning Pool, Soil, Dope, Bobaflex. It just kind of goes on. Duff McKagan's Loaded, which was an amazing thing for me to actually meet and play with a member that was, an original member of Guns N' Roses. That's something that if you told my 14, 15-year-old self, hey, one day you'll get a picture with Duff McKagan and you'll play the same show with him, I probably wouldn't have believed you. We played the Rock Oklahoma Festival was really cool because we didn't necessarily get to meet a lot of the bigger bands, but just watching some of those big bands up close like we did, Twisted Sister and Night Ranger and Rat and Jackal and just these bands that, are iconic and you kind of grew up with them, that was a pretty amazing experience too. We've in our long and storied career, we've gotten to play with quite a few names, and it all looks really good on paper. So...
Nice, man. Well, that gives you a little picture of some of the glamour and some of the tough side of the independent rock world. And but I want to turn you over to some of my co-hosts here with Michael and Susan and Selah. So so get ready, Andy. You're in trouble now.
All right. I'm braced.
Well, you mentioned Pop Evil. I think Deal with the Devil is one of my favorite songs out there right now.
Yeah, that new record's fantastic. They honestly, their records have gotten better each record they've put out. And the interesting thing about that is they've lost core members along the way, but they've managed to just keep that sound going and just expand on it and improve on it and hone it. But yeah, the new record's really, really good. And those guys are really cool too. We played several shows with them over time. Sometimes we've went to shows where we weren't playing, and they'll remember us, and we'll party with them backstage or on their bus or whatever after the show. And they've always just been really, really cool and really supportive of us. So.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things that's always just amazed me. It's like when I go and I do horror conventions and whatnot, you know, you see the actors from films that, you know, you grew up watching and you know, whatnot. And you know, the for instance, Steve Dash, the guy that played Jason in Part 2, every time I go to a convention, he'll seek me out. He's like, I don't even know. He's like behind me, and he'll tap me on the shoulder and like shake my hand and say, you know, hey, Mike, how's it going? What's going on? You know, and everything. And it's just like, wow,
yeah.
You know, not only does he remember me, but he like looks for me.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, you see so many people, and if you make a connection with somebody, you know, that familiarity goes a long way. They'll remember, oh, okay, I've hung out with them here, and here. Especially, like, in our case, some of these bands, we played with them in different cities, you know, multiple cities sometimes, over in the course of several years or whatever. But something like that kind of stands out because they're like, oh, well, I don't just know this guy from, you know, Huntington, West Virginia. I played with them around Columbus, or I played with them, you know, in Lexington, too, or wherever, you know. And that goes a long way because they kind of, the more that they can kind of hang their hat on as far as, okay, this person was in all these different places and I keep running into them, you know, that breeds familiarity and you know, they might kind of seek that out. But you just kind of realize that, you know, everybody started pretty much the same place that, you know, everybody else did, and they're just regular people who, you know, worked at it really hard and, you know, in most cases, doesn't really change people a whole lot.
Right. What's it like to be on the road for an extended period of time? I know I've seen a lot of people talk about how draining it can be and whatnot, but then you hear, you know, people who get inspired by it and just automatically, as soon as they get done with a leg of their tour or whatnot, they just want to get right back in the studio and start recording.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest on that. We've never really had any really extended touring periods, just because we have people to string that kind of thing together, or, you know, because I think even though most of the band has, you know, jobs and in some cases families that kind of keep them anchored here, they would take the step if something came about to where we were actually able to go out for long periods of time. I think they'd do it, but we just honestly haven't really toured, but we've played a lot of places, and we've done it's the Weekend Warrior thing kind of deal, you know. There have been exceptions, I guess, you know, like when we went out to Rocklahoma, we were out there for several days, but that was, you know, kind of staying at a festival as opposed to, you know, hitting a bunch of different places. So, yeah, I can't really speak to that. I wish I could. It's something I hope to say that, you know, I've actually done a East Coast tour or a West Coast tour or something, you know. But at this point,
right.
we haven't. So.
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to jump in here and take you in a totally different direction for a minute. I'm actually one of the people that sat down and watched the Dead Rockstar video for the first time today, and it was actually a whole lot of fun. So couple of questions about it. The story behind it, I mean, the song itself is a story, but the story in the video, how did you guys come up with that?
You know, it kind of morphed. We had a couple of different ideas. At one point, we were talking about. Well, the original setting for the video, we were going to do a strip, and we actually, that was the plan up until the day before the shoot. We were going to go to the club, and we were going to be picked up at the bar by these sort of femme fatale groupies, I guess. And they were going to take us off in various parts of the club and try to kill us off or whatever. And somewhere in the planning stage, before the location actually fell out the night before, we kind of decided that we wanted to change that a bit. Give that a twist ending where it wasn't necessarily apparent that they were successful in their attempts to snuff us out or whatever. And then we went through a couple of different ideas. Like originally we were going to have this room we were going to all walk out of, and the ladies were going to be dangling on meat hooks with, like, you know, blood dripping down and covered in plastic or whatever. And we realized that was just not really feasible as far as how we were going to pull that off with limited budget and time. So we kind of decided that we would just kind of leave it open until the end of the video, and then you would kind of see that, well, we obviously turned the tables but didn't necessarily show how. And I think that kind of worked for us because it was sort of a bigger metaphor in the sense that we've had all these things try to come in and just destroy our efforts or tear up the band or, you know, try to stop us or whatever, and we've overcame those things because we're still here, you know. So I think that's kind of where that whole concept was kind of born of. The other funny thing about that was not only did we lose our location the night before, we had several people who were supposed to be in the video who just didn't even show up on the day we were shooting. So we were kind of scrambling, and we were calling people to hey, do you want to appear in our video? And, you know, so actually the drummer Chris and my guitar player Shane, their girlfriend stepped in and performed the roles. So kind of funny on that aspect. Does that answer your question at all?
Yeah, it did, actually. And it's kind of amazing, mm-hmm. the story now, how well it came together in the end, considering everything you went through to get there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, the location dropped out probably about 9:30, 10:30 that night. The owner of the club just decided he didn't want to do it. So we had the video guys coming down from Columbus at like 10, 11 in the morning, and no idea where we were going to shoot it. So we end up shooting it actually in our rehearsal space and our guitar player's house. Luckily, he's got a big house. There's a lot of different places to sort of exploit, and, you know, it made it look like it was all these different places, but really it was just shot in two locations. And it came out incredible. We were really amazed by it. I mean, we kind of knew as we were shooting it, and we were just kind of looking at just the raw footage that they were showing us or whatever. We're like, okay, this is cool. We're going to have something. But then once he started sending us the edits, we were like, wow, this looks way better than I thought it was going to. And the whole thing just came together, really. We shot it all in 8 hours, which is the other amazing part of the whole thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that all the performance stuff and all of the, you know, the conceptual stuff. And in some cases, we only had, like, maybe a couple hours with some of our talent. There were people who had to go to work and things like that. So we were kind of like, all right, well, we've only got so many hours with this person, so let's get this done. And, you know, we got somebody coming in at 4. And, you know, so somehow we got the whole thing done in 8 hours and didn't have to reshoot anything. The editing process, they probably sent us 3 or 4 different versions of it over the course of about a month, and we kept sending our corrections back and really happy with the end product. And a lot of people think that that we spent a lot of money on it, and we really didn't. The whole thing cost under $1,000 to shoot and edit. So,
well, we all know that's what you do, Andy, is sit around and count money, you know, from all the royalties pouring in and stuff.
Yeah. it's piling up to the ceiling.
That's what you do out in the mountains of West Virginia. I know it. I knew it.
Right.
I knew it.
That's why we need two houses on property, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Selah, I know that you had some definite thoughts on the video. You definitely want to
You're
dive in here.
You're going to throw me under the bus. No, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to behave myself. Stop it.
Oh,
there's no limit.
Man.
What?
There's no limit.
No, now in the story, now I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there knowing the story behind it now. I'm going to behave myself. So... let's see, what else could I ask? You said, what?
Oh, come on, that's no fun.
All right, fine, we'll go for the backup question that Stephen was bribing me to ask, because apparently I'm the only one ballsy enough to. Okay, as a musician, and we all know how, you know, the business can be and things like this, and Zoomer put me up to this, this is not my fault. What? I would never ask something like this when I'm in the court. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, please. I know that.
Yeah, you know this question. Okay, we have running bets on this with any, like, musician or personality that we know. Susan and I do usually. But how often have you used your own music or repertoire material or image to get laid?
Well, you know, in my earlier days of the band, before Carla, that was, you know, if that was something that needed to seal the deal or whatever, then, yeah, I mean, I'd certainly, hey, I'm the singer for Zero King. Not that it meant a whole lot in those days, but we were just kind of getting off our feet as a local band at that point. So, I've been with my girlfriend since 2006, so, you know, that hasn't been necessary for a long time, I guess.
Well, you know, I have a moniker for
there are members of my band that probably would be better suited to ask that question. you know, so let's just say that, sure, it helps some people get laid sometimes.
Yeah. See, there you go. You know, we're trying to give you a good way to tell one of the, you know, the old school kind of stories there. But of course, you know, of course I love Carla. I call her the Zero Queen. That's my little nickname for her. So I know she gets a kick out of that.
She can party like she's in the band. She parties harder than anybody in the band sometimes. So.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, that may be one of our song titles. We've got this sort of half-serious song that me and Chris have been working on for the better part of a year or something. And it ended up with one of the phrases in it, she parties like she's in the band. And I'm like, that's a really good title.
It's fun. It's awesome. Okay, semi-serious. This is more serious. The book isn't out anymore. I'm trying to find another home for it. But I ask this question a lot. I was doing a spec fic story, kind of mixing demons and rock stars and some fairy tales and stuff last year. And I distanced myself from a lot of my musicians' friends with this question. So this has become my favorite thing to ask musicians now. So if you were hit by a bus, let's say added to you and cursed by some dark force and had, like, the loss of most of your body but could still play music, would that be something that you would find would cast a dark shadow on your life, or would you cling to that? Like, where in the scheme of your life do you feel is music more of a salvation, or is it more of a business, or what is it to you?
So let me just rephrase it here, so I kind of get it.
Yeah.
If I was hit by a bus and I lost the use of my limbs.
You're still able to play your music, yeah, but you've lost, like, most of the function that helps you get around from day to day.
That's really hard because, I mean, yeah, there's the singing aspect of it, but there's also just the being on stage and like, getting crazy and really getting into it kind of aspect of it, too, the running around like a madman.
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of equally fun, really. I love to create music, but I think performing music for me is my ultimate outlet. So, wow. I mean, would I probably still sing in bands if I was, let's say, disabled or whatever? I guess the answer would be yes, because at that point, that would be probably all I had to cling to. And as far as the business of it, I kind of do love the business of it too. So I don't know. That's none of that's very definitive. So.
No, it's honest. It's a good honest answer. It's probably the most honest answer I've gotten. Actually, you're probably one of the few that hasn't been afraid to feed me a line with your answer. So that's bravo for that.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, I know when I write, I get inspired by listening to music. Do you get inspired to write songs from what you read?
You know, sometimes. A lot of what we there's a lot of different aspects of what we do as far as our music goes. Sometimes it's based off, you know, personal experiences, but also it can be sort of political or, you know, social kind of thing. And I think that necessarily the sometimes the references might come from either literary or from movies or something like that. I don't necessarily know if we went so far as, like, saying, okay, well, we've got this song and we're going to completely write about this particular movie or this particular book or whatever. It's more of just sort of peppering it with references from kind of anywhere and everywhere.
Do you ever read, like, I'm thinking of, like, Joe Hill's Heart-Shaped Box, and, like, have you ever read books that, like, sort of take place in the music world and think, like, oh, they really got this wrong, or, okay, I see where they're going with this, or anything like that on the other hand, I guess?
Oh, as far as fictionalized music
books?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's odd because I don't think I've really read a whole lot of fictionalized music books. I've certainly read a lot of biographies. And then I read a lot of fiction, but they don't necessarily – the fiction I read doesn't necessarily go into the music world per se. I guess maybe the one exception to that I can think of would be like Vampire Lestat. That's both a fantasy and that kind of delves into the idea of him being a rock star or a pop star or whatever as well. So yeah, I mean, there's certainly, I guess, exaggerations of the fantasy of the rock star or whatever, and we kind of delve into that in our lyrics anyway. A lot of what we write about is sort of this idealized idea of, and in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek sort of almost, you know, poking fun kind of way. The idealized idea of stardom or superstardom or whatever.
Well, very cool, Andy. I tell you what, give your contacts real quick here. Hang on, you definitely can stay on the show, but we're getting ready to bring in our second guest of the evening, and I know Sayla's going to be bringing him in. But go ahead and give your contacts out real quick.
Sure. Well, I had this whole thing. Before I do that, I had this whole thing where I thought you guys were going to ask me about, like, you know, science fiction and fantasy and horror. So I kind of went through in my head all the different, like, sort of early books and movies that I was really into, and we never even delved into that. But that's okay.
That means you're going to have to come back.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's make another time where I come in and we don't even talk about the band, really. And we just talk about my kind of love for the genre and, you know, sort of early entries into that world. So, but yeah,
sure.
Real quickly, my contact info.
Sure.
Zero King. Let's see. Our .com. There's not a whole lot on it really. But it's zerokingrock.com. Our best, most up to date thing is probably Facebook. So facebook.com/zerokingfans. ReverbNation.com/zeroking is another good resource. And then I'm on Twitter @zerokingandy. And, of course, we have a YouTube channel as well. That's Zero King Band is our YouTube channel. So,
cool. Well, Sayla, do you want to take the honors here for the next guest?
Sure. Our next guest is an up-and-coming force in the world of horror. He is, I'm lucky enough to have met him, well, online at least, through the last year. He is one of the most positive, awesomely helpful, upbeat people I know. He is behind Evil Jester's Press, Hidden Thought Press. Evil Jester comic just came out and it hit number one on Amazon. This guy is insane, and I'm so happy to know him. Please welcome Charles Day to the Stars Chamber Show.
Oh, geez. Hello. I have the Evil Jester
here
with me, and believe it or not, he never blushes, but he's blushing right now, so we're very happy to be here. So
I'm happy to have you on, man. Do you want to talk about, you have a lot going on right now. Like, every time I see your Facebook feed, like, I'm just like, want to give up because you have 10 million things coming out.
I have so many great friends, so many supportive friends, and it's not just me, it's just the whole crew, all of us. We're all, you know, doing something, you know, helping each other out and promoting, and, you know, we're jumping into this or that. So it's been a lot, you know, but it's been a lot of fun, too. I've met so many great people and so many, you know, phenomenal artists and writers and comic book people. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, I know we share a love of horror comics, and that inspired you to do the Evil Jester comic imprint or the title. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, about
like,
it reminds me a lot of like the. Go ahead, dude. No, you know, Selah, it's been a long, long journey. It was actually a passion of mine. Almost 2 years ago, I just wanted to put a comic together of a bunch of short stories and make them into, like, you know, a visually, you know, beautiful color, full color illustrations. And I wanted to get, you know, my author friends and other people I knew and just make a great, you know, I wanted like 20 stories in this big, big comic anthology. However, you know, reality smacked me in the face quite a few times. And then I met Taylor Grant online on Facebook, and, you know, it was like the stars were aligned. He just happened to be a man with over 60,000 comics and, you know, worked with Stan Lee, very well connected in the industry, and just knew a whole ton about comics and kind of like let me know that, you know, what the true reality was. And from there, we became more and more friends. And then I just said, you know what, dude, just do this, you know, whatever you want me to do, I'll follow. And then he became editor-in-chief and partner, and it's a long, long story, but the comic itself took so long. But the bottom line is what we wanted was we just wanted to bring back, you know, the days when, you know, people were young and they were reading Tales in the Crypt and Vault of Horror, and you had that great feeling of horror when you read those comics. We just wanted to bring it back. We didn't want to imitate it. We just wanted to bring back that feeling, but in a new style. So obviously the reviews that are pouring in are showing that people are loving that.
You've gotten some awesome reviews. Yeah, like some Bloody Disgusting and a lot of other places. Like, I'm so proud of you guys. This is insane. It reminds me a lot of, like, the early Creepy and Eerie, which are titles I love so much. I'm a terrible girl, but I love those titles. So it makes me so happy to see this, like, kind of coming back, that you're bringing it back.
And you know what the best thing is? The best thing is, it. You know, I love all those, too, and you know what, but the bottom line is there's so many great horror authors out there that haven't had the opportunity to showcase their short stories visually. And we've got some really great stories. So, you know, we picked a whole bunch of great stories, and obviously the first ones showcasing Jonathan Mayberry and Jack Ketchum. But people are just saying how well they transferred, adapted into the comic. People are loving them. Some of them have read the stories already, but now they're reading them in a comic, and they just love it. They love it.
It's awesome. And you guys, like, you hung out at, like, number one at Amazon for a little bit at least. Are you still, do you know where you're at right now, or are you still up
there? When I last checked, I know I do tend to check now and then, but we're still hovering in the top 50 range. But, yeah, for, like, 3 days straight, we were number one, and we were in the top 10 and in the top 20. We were actually also in the very low numbers with, and this is all paid sales, we were in the very low numbers with next to the Walking Dead, Eerie, Conan graphic novel. So it was cool. Peanuts, even Peanuts, believe it or not,
yeah.
Peanuts, you know, sells so well. But we were there, and we were pretty excited about it. Yeah, it was something to always remember for our first inaugural comic.
I've got our first question in the chat room for you. Thomas is asking, are there going to be opening up for other comic artists and writers or other comic book runs separate from the horror event? Is there going to be like an Evil Jester universe? So are you sticking with the horror label, or are you kind of opening things up to other genres eventually?
We are. The only thing right now is we're in this phase of, oh my God, we just released our first product, and we've got three to four other really, really great projects on the development table that need to come out.
Right.
But in between those, Taylor and I have been concentrating on. We definitely want to do a lot more than just horror. We want to open up to science fiction, fantasy, just anything that does. Even if we find the next great superhero that we want to put in, you know, and try and do a 5-issue run and see how well it sells. We're open to a lot of opportunities, but the bottom line is where, you know, if anyone knows how the comic book industry works, it's a very, very tough market. It's a very hard to really make a profit on comics. So that's why we're called Grant Day Media. We're looking at other ways to market our material. We've got to see that it's got crossover potential, maybe for merchandising, maybe for a video game, it's got to have some type of appeal. So we want to do both, but we've got to work at, we got to work it so we can have slow growth, but at the same time continue to grow, because we want to have everybody, we want to have as many people as we can involved in our growth, but we've got to do it right, otherwise we won't exist, you know, because it's,
right.
I'm just being
it smart.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, there's going to be opportunities for a whole bunch of artists and writers as we grow. Yeah.
Cool. Now, you have a new book out right now, Deep Within. Would you like to – I know you've written some young adult stuff in the past. This is more your adult novel now, right? This is more, like, regular horror.
Oh, which one? Deep Within?
Deep Within, yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah, Deep Within is my first adult... it's my first adult horror novel, thriller, I mean, actually horror mystery combined, but I wrote it many years ago while I was working the late-night shifts at this hospital, the psych hospital I was on, and I was working on short stories as well because for some reason, as I was finishing it, I just didn't feel like, 100% with it, and I had people reading it and stuff like that, but when you're a new writer, there was a lot of mistakes involved and everything, so I kind of put it to the side, and I started working on short stories when I was involved in all these little small press forums that were like, there were so many of them a few years ago. And then what happened is eventually after I sold my short stories, and then I sold my first young adult novel, and then my second young adult novel came out, and then I was, I've gotten it professionally edited by Henry Schneider, and then I shopped it around, and then I finally sold Deep Within, and then, of course, I was real excited. But it went through so many edits. It was like over 100,000 words, but by the time it was done and ready to be published, it was down to 74. So you can imagine how much material came out. Absolutely. So,
that's
but,
awesome.
Yes, it does. But I'm getting some good reviews, and I'm excited. Again, it just came out, so it's going to take a while to, go around. So.
Right. Very cool. I'm definitely have to check that one out. I haven't gotten there yet, but that's on my to-read list for sure. One of the things that strikes me about you is you are just so damn positive and so, like, ungodly helpful to everyone. You're just so nice. And I mean, I know there are a lot of really nice horror writers, no matter what label we tend to get out there, but you really kind of stand out to me. How, is it that you have managed to just keep your chin up through? I mean, I know you've had some setbacks and you've gone back and forth through the years. So where does this awesome attitude come from?
Well, I'm a social butterfly. I've always been, you know, working in the mental health field for 20-something years. You have to be very personable with people. You've got to be able to talk people down if they're getting aggravated or, you know, psychotic or whatever, if I was in the hospital or whatever, working on it with a patient. But I just, being a social butterfly, I've always had a positive attitude. But behind the scenes, you know, I don't share with everybody my, I mean, I've had a ton of rejections. I've had, you know, agents turn me down. For example, like The Legend of the Pumpkin Thief, I'm trying to get that back in second print because the original publisher closed their doors. And I have so much I want to do with that book. I've got the sequel that I want to get out. The screenplay is done. It's going to be sent to me soon. And a graphic novel is in the works for that. Yeah, but I'm trying to find, you know, but I've gotten my share of rejections from publishers and from agents so far. So, you know, but I stay positive. You know, how do I stay positive? Support from all my Facebook friends, my mentors, my family, I just look at the future. I look at there's always something else I can try. I guess that's how I do it. But it's, you know, a whole bunch of things combined.
That's some great, I mean, that's just really good to hear. And I think it's good for other people who are starting out here. And I always try to point people your way because I feel like you do have a lot of good things to articulate about really what this business is and how to just keep going. Let's see. In terms of horror, what type of horror do you really like to write? I mean, what does that differ from the stuff that you really like to read or watch?
Oh yeah, me with, well, see, I grew up on just loving everything with horror, you know. Ever since my dad put my sister and I, for I don't know why, but we were young and he put us in front of TV and The Exorcist was on and we both ran out screaming when the girl turned her head.
It was a babysitting movie. Like when I was a kid and at home, like my dad put on It when it was his turn to babysit me.
I know. I mean, traumatized. I have a 5-year-old, and she caught some of The Walking Dead, and I had taken her to a convention out in Econ, and she's walking around, you know, telling people, "I want your brains," and all that kind of stuff, you know. I hope she doesn't get mad at me when she gets older, the things that I like in horror. Okay, my daughter's right next to me here. Hold on one second. What's up, honey? Come on. I want the phone. All right, when I get off, okay? I promise. Okay, sorry about that. Talking about my daughter.
No,
but,
you're fine.
I was watching, things like It's Alive growing up and The Thing and all these movies. I just loved horror. I loved reading Stephen King and Dean Koontz. And all that. Just always liked being scared. My friends and I made a haunted house in my mom's basement just on, you know, on purpose to scare our friends. We'd play pictures, scary pictures. I'd always play the evil monster and my friends would play the good guys. So I was always into that kind of stuff. And then of course writing about it. But, I love young adult horror. I love reading it.
Yeah.
I love reading young adult mystery. I'm more into the young adult because it makes me feel young again. Makes me feel like I'm there with my teenage buddies. That's how I did it when I wrote The Pumpkin Thief. But I do also like adult horror. I mean, I have a novel coming out in April that I co-authored with a great guy, talented author, Mark Taylor. And it's adult horror, and it's creepy, and it's really good, and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed writing. You know, I mean, he was really good with his portion of it, and I felt I did a good job with my portion of the story. Like, we kind of split it between two protagonists. But, you know, I don't know. I just, anything that gives me a little scare, I'm into. But I've also been delving into some fantasy, too. But it's got to have some horror to it, you know?
That's cool. Yeah. I have noticed that, like, it seems like dark fantasy has, like, become, not, maybe not the new horror, but it's definitely, like, a lot of authors are that may be traditionally horror kind of veering into. Like, I feel like Joe Hill has started veering more into the dark fantasy than, like, the booga booga horror that Stephen King was, per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Joe Hill. Joe Hill is one of my favorite authors right now. I've read all his comics.
I love him. I love Have you read Lock and Key? Love all of them. Oh my gosh.
Yes, I do. I love them. I'm a geek. I'm a Joe Hill geek. I'm going to be, hopefully, I'll be able to see him for the fourth time. It's going to be at the KGB in New York City. I'm going to shoot up there by train. The city's only about 20 minutes. I've got to get out there and see him for the fourth time. Maybe I'll sneak him at Evil Jester Comic. Oh, hey, Joe, remember me? Hey, take a peek at this comic. No, I'm kidding. But I know he loves horror comics. You know, he knows me. He does know me.
Yeah.
He's seen me enough. I saw him at the Stoker. I can't believe I even asked him. When our first Evil Jester Press book was being developed years ago, I was running around the Stokers, telling people, "Oh, you got to be in. We're doing this first book anthology. It's called Help Wanted: Tales of Unchopped Terror." I'm calling Pete Giglio. Lisa Morton's interested. Vince Lagano's interested. I just spoke to Joe Hill, and he respectfully declined. He's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, I asked him." Because I was throwing names at Joe Hill. I'm like, "Yeah, we got this person and that person. Now we have Stephen Hulk over in the United Kingdom that's coming in." And he thought it was cool. He really did. He's like, "Charlie, I respect you for asking and all, but I'm just too busy right now. I'm going to have to decline."
Yeah.
Damn. So.
You'll get there. I'm sure I can see this happening in the future. It would not surprise me in the slightest to see you team up with him in some way in the future. It would make me very happy to see that happen. But
that would be a dream of mine. That would be a dream of mine. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do chase after my dreams, but we'll see.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for that. Here I am.
Yeah.
Do any of the other guys have any questions for Charles?
Yeah, I do actually. In the book and the magazine world, obviously things are going more to, say, e-reader and digital and stuff. Talk about how that kind of, like, plays out in the comic world, because obviously one of the things about a comic is, you know, if you get the physical, you know, comic in front of you and you're flipping the pages or whatever. Does that kind of translate to where have you thought about, say, putting comics online or whatnot so that people kind of can tune into it that way, so to speak?
Oh, you mean digitally?
Digital,
like, comics?
Well, I guess, like,
yeah.
not just e-reader, but, like, you know, magazines, for example, a lot of those are going to online where the magazine's just online and you flip the pages, and read it that way or whatever.
I think that's a great idea. I think it's something to look into. I don't know. I haven't, like, I know there's a lot of new technology coming up. When I was at the New York City Comic Book Convention this past October, and I was able to get away from the HWA booth for a while. Like, of course, they always had to reel me back in because I got lost out there in the crowd. But being a little guy and stuff, and plus drooling at all the stuff that was there. But I did notice there's a lot of stuff going on with that, and with motion comics, and with comics where people like where you could actually tap the like your iPad, and you can take the color, and all of a sudden the panels change to the ink, and then you touch it again, and the panels change to the original sketch. So you can actually go back to how the artist rendered each panel from their initial pencils straight through. I think that's a great advantage to digital.
Yeah.
The motion, which, you know, Marvel and DC are doing motion comics now. I think that's phenomenal. I saw one of them, and I was, like, blown away with the crashing of the windows and Superman flying in the air, and you can hear the wind. I think, well, that's great. But you know what? The bottom line is I still love to grab that comic, open it up, smell the interior, you know what I mean, touch those pages, and be able to slip it back
totally,
in a nice place. Yeah, so you know what? I don't know what the future is with that, but the same way Evil Jester Press has been trying to, you know, go with the flow of the times, it's the same thing Evil Jester Comics will be looking at as we grow, especially Taylor Grant, because him and his team that are on board of Evil Jester Comics have a lot more experience than I do on technology and all that with comics, but it's something that, you know, I'm open to everything. I think it would be a great thing to have it like a magazine, too, where people can just flip the pages. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, one thing I wanted to also bring in, I would be amiss to mention is Imaginarium. And, of course, you're going to be coming out to join us next September. And kind of along that same line of questioning, what is your show schedule like for coming here?
All I know is I want to get there. That's the main thing. I do want to get down there. I want to hang with everyone, have a great time. I would love to, you know, be on a couple panels. You know, I'd love to be, you know, listening in on panels. I definitely want to, you know, listen. I'm sure you guys are going to have a great lineup. And I know a lot of guys you booked are going to be there. Are people I know, and I look forward to meeting Michael Nast and all them guys again. So I'm just, you know, I just would like to get as many of our Jess Lee crew and myself down there and just have a great time and help support you guys for your first, conference and, you know, whatever you need us for. You know, we'll be there to help.
Yeah, it's going to be great fun. And actually, it's interesting you mentioned Michael because he's actually our guest next week. So, we got back-to-back Imaginarium guests here. I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, and Michael's a great guy. He really is. He just blurred my Deep Within book, too. It was, like, awesome. I read his The Return of the Mothman book, too, that's coming out. Great. I mean, the man knows horror. He definitely knows horror. That's all I got to say. Be prepared. He's got a great book coming out.
Oh, yeah, we worked with him. You may have seen it. It was the Writer's Workshop of Science Fiction and Fantasy that came out this over 2013, and that was a great project that we did via Kickstarter, actually, to get it ramped up.
Awesome.
But we worked with Michael, and it worked out really nice, and it continues to get a lot of good response.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, that's the thing, Steven. I mean, I love that. I love that people, you know, like us authors and publishers and writers, I think it's better for all of us, you know, if we get together, we collaborate, we work on things together. I'm working with Brian Thomas Schmidt. We're doing a Gaslamp Terrors anthology, and it's going to be sci-fi and punk, steampunk and all that. And, you know, it's just great to be able to collaborate with other people and you know, as much as I love horror, I like sci-fi fantasy too, and I want to get more involved in that as well, and working with other people and doing great things, you know.
Well, when it comes to horror, though, I know I just listening to you, I know you and Michael West are going to get along famously, because I'm just kind of listening to kind of a lot of your comments, and I thank God. I mean, you and Michael, I mean, you guys are just going to hit it off great, I think.
I look forward to meeting him too. I look forward to meeting Michael, absolutely, because. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, because Michael's actually, you mentioned the dark fantasy kind of segue with horror and things like that, and Michael, just talking about right now, I mean, Michael's actually, that's one of the things that's been real popular for him with Poseidon's Children and his next Legacy of the Gods book that's coming out that has that kind of dark fantasy, dark urban fantasy kind of motif, definitely some good kind of connections here for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking, and I like the way you've got some things set up, and you know, with the workshops, I think that's all great. You know, it's I'm really looking forward to it, and I know you guys are excited. I know that.
Yeah, well, the thing is I'm kind of excited about having a convention atmosphere, but the centerpiece is about creative writing, and that's the thing, because a lot of conventions, I mean, great conventions, not you know, saying anything about any, but they have a lot of different focuses and, you know, fan conventions and autographs with celebrities and things like that, but this one, I mean, it has a convention fun, all the kind of things that you see at a con, but the kind of centerpiece is creative writing, and I think that's one area that I think you're going to have a lot of fun with, because, you know, it is centered on writing and creative writing.
Good. Yeah, I'm always I'm like a sponge. I love to continue learning and, you know, learning more about our craft and, you know, whatever it takes to be a better writer. I mean, I'm even trying to jump into an MFA program just to, you know, better myself as a writer. Being a writer, you know, you always, you know, if you, I believe, and I've heard from people that are successful, like Jonathan Mayberry's and all that, in order to, you know, be successful, one of the things is always to be open-minded and continue to, you know, learn more and more about the craft and continue to better yourself as a writer. So I think that's perfect. I mean, be able to go in there and creative writing and being able to learn more and walk away from a convention, to me, is more important than just going to a convention to hang out and drink beers. I have nothing against that, but and we can drink beers, but I think we need to, you know, roll up our sleeves and learn the craft too and share with our friends. I agree, absolutely.
Well, with 11 tracks of literary oriented programming, I'm sure we're gonna be looking at the guts of writing. Don't worry.
Well, I know. As a writer, I go to you know, like Context and other, you know, author centric conventions, and I always come away from there just so, you know, jazzed up. You know, it's just like, you know, it's just such a, so inspiring to be able to talk to, you know, your peers about what you do.
I know. I agree. And, you know, at the same time, just for our listeners and ourselves too, one thing I definitely learned, actually, when I used to read the Reader's Digest books in the beginning, before I even got a short story published, they always said, go to conferences. People always said, go to conferences. You'll network. You'll meet people. Oh, my God, is that so true? That is so true. I know everyone doesn't have the money, but if you can pick one or two a year, if you get one that comes in your area, do not miss it up. Go. Check it out. Meet authors, you know, publishers, writers, creative types, because you could walk out of there with, like, you know, so much more than you'll get anywhere else. You know, so it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this coming years. I got a bunch that I've been adding in the schedule. I'm definitely going back to Context, like Michael said, and then Con Carolinas and Hypericon and Connuga down in Chattanooga. That's another great one. Mid-South Con down in Memphis. And, of course, that at that book place in Madison, they got a great author's fair. I mean, there's just a slew of stuff. MoCon in May. I mean, there's just a slew of stuff coming up that's going to be real fun. And then, you know, then I know Phantom Fest, I guess, is going to be again in August. So, I mean, there's just a lot of different events that are, yeah, it's going to be an exciting year, I think, for sure. But I have to say, that, yeah, I'm definitely going to be excited when everybody converges at Imaginarium. That'll be a lot of fun.
Okay. Yeah. I don't get to go to that many, you know. I mean, there are some up here on the East Coast and everything, but, I can't go to Portland. I'd love to get out to Portland to the big convention, the HWA, but that's not going to happen this year. It's just too far.
Well, we've got, like I said, we're winding down
time.
Here, time-wise, yeah.
Yeah, it's about 2 minutes, my darling, so you may want to have Charles give his links and then wrap up what you want to wrap up.
Sure. Charles, I'll let you get the links to wrap it up. Next week we have, of course, Michael Nost and the week Bram Stoker winning editor-author, and the week after we have Rachel Smith of Bitten by Books and Violet Patterson with her Paranormal Emerald Seer series. So that's coming up, but Charles, go ahead and give us how to find you with all your great activities.
Facebook. I don't have my own website. I haven't had my website. I never had a website for an author. Come see me on Facebook. That's where all my friends and buddies and the creative types are. And I just, after all these, since October of 2012, I started drawing. I finally got the guts up this month to open up my first Artist Illustrator page. Come visit me there. You know, that's where I am. And, of course, Evil Jester Comics, Evil Jester Press, and HiddenThoughtsPress.com for any of, you know, our books and things like that. But me, Facebook, that's where I am. Charles Day, Facebook. Tuesday 92 or something like that, Facebook. Okay? And thank you guys for having me on. I totally appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. And I know we all were stoked to have you.
Yeah, no, it was great. I hope to get back again. And, you know, and I love seeing you guys online, too. And Sailor, you know, Sailor and I are like Facebook buddies. We see each other all the time. So big shout out to you, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for promoting and supporting me. And
no problem, dude. You know me. If I like stuff and I believe in stuff, I'm going to be right there pushing it. Because, I mean, it's not about one person or over another. You know, we all got to do this together.
That's right. That's right. People need me. They know they can just message me, and I do the best I can to help. If I can, I'll lead you to someone else. All right, guys. Yeah, thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you. Thanks, Charles, and thank you, Andy, from Zero King, and we'll take care, and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Rock on.
Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good night, everybody.